All right. Well, hi, guys. My name is Ryan, and today we're doing our parenting meeting on family conflict resolution. I wish I could have found something more applicable, but I guess this will have to do. I know none of us deal with this in any way, but hopefully God can show us a few things through this talk here. So let me pray for us, and we'll get started. Lord, I'm thankful that you use conflict for your purposes. We know that you work all things for good to those who love you and who are called according to your purpose, including conflict. And we learn great things through this. And we just want to set aside this time right now to allow you to speak to us. If you've got a word for us here, Lord, help us not to deny that or suppress it, but allow your words to pierce our hearts. Amen. Okay, I want to start by just defining this word conflict. It doesn't have to be something that means you have really heated emotions or that you're yelling. Really, conflict is just disagreement. Now, when you use the word conflict, that probably means it's a deeper disagreement or maybe a lengthier disagreement. But at the end of the day, that's what it is. You disagree about something. And so to resolve conflict means you're figuring out how to handle it when you disagree. How do you determine what to do there? So that's what we mean by conflict, and people do it in different ways. Okay, so first of all, there can be a lot of good that comes from conflict. Conflict really can be a very healthy thing. A couple points on that. Number one, it helps us to determine what's really right in a situation. Without conflict, usually the most opinionated person just gets everything. It's when someone says, hold on, I disagree and I'm willing to fight about it, that you're going to figure out what's right, not just what that strong personality determined. Conflict is a good way to learn about yourself. What's really important to you? What really drives you? You got heated, you got upset, you disagreed, you wanted to do something different. That teaches you something. You take a step back and think about that. There's something cool that you're going to have learned about yourself through that. Conflict is a way to see God work. Outside of conflict, you can often see all these good things going on in your life and be thankful, but you haven't had to sit and trust in Him in some kind of way. Working through a tough conflict usually takes steps of faith. And you'll experience some of those God moments that you can look back on for years to come. You can help others understand how cool God is because of Him helping you work through conflict. So keep that in mind in the midst of your conflict, that God's going to work here. And that helps you maintain a positive attitude in the midst of it. And then lastly here, lack of conflict can be a bad sign. A lot of times people get under a lot of guilt about the amount of conflict they have, and you compare your marriage or your family to other marriages and families, and you're like, man, we must be crazy. We must not be doing things right because we have so much conflict. Well, I'd be more worried if I didn't see any conflict. You know, I think about, like, I can get so heated and so passionate watching a Buckeyes game. But if I then never have conflict with my wife or my kids, what is that saying? Where are my passions? That would be a bad sign. So yeah, it is easy to feel guilty in what I would call high conflict families. And it's easy to feel proud in some of those lower conflict families. I happen to be in a family where I've got two daughters who are very fearful to look bad in front of other people. So we'll be at family picnics with other families and stuff, and there's a couple boys screaming and punching each other, wrestling, and my daughters are like, you know, standing there all fearful watching. And you know, I'm sure some of the parents are like, oh man, they probably think we're terrible and whatever. But it just happens. It happens. Now, guess what happens the moment we get in the car to drive home from that picnic? My kids are going to let me have it. They're, you know, relentless. Even the sweetest little girls have desperately wicked hearts. And it will show up when it's just the family. So you got to fight against that guilt. Each family's built differently. And don't suppress the conflict. Avoid the conflict. Don't beat yourself up over the conflict. But embrace it as an opportunity for growth with all these four points we're talking about here. And see what God wants to do with that. Okay, so the rest of our time here, I want to be really practical. When I've listened to these parenting teachings, what stands out is usually there's one or two really practical points that I hadn't thought through or needed reminded of, and my spouse and I talk through that, and we implement some changes from that. So that's what I'm going to do. I've written down a bunch of my thoughts, but then maybe more importantly, I've interviewed several couples that I really respect and asked them about three different categories. So we're going to start with the parent or the husband-wife, that relationship. Then we're going to talk about the parent-child relationship. And then finally, we'll talk about the child-child relationship, because in all three of those, we can have conflict. And for each of those dynamics, we'll talk both proactively, how to set yourself up for healthy conflict resolution. And then we'll talk about being reactive and making sure that's done in a healthy way as well. All right. So again, hopefully super practical. Hopefully one or two points stick out. There might be eight, but be realistic. You and your spouse could figure out one or two that you could really implement there. Don't overdo it. And just as a qualification, I'm listing out some ideals here. Nobody does this perfectly. I'm going to fail in a lot of these areas most days, but the ideals are what you're shooting for. And so it's often helpful to remember those or learn those and aim for those. And I'm sure there's going to be aspects of this that you're like, oh, I already knew that, big deal. But there's also going to be aspects of this where you're going to think, man, I've really failed as a parent here. And that might be true. And you can give that to Jesus. He's covered all your sins. And cast that on him and resolve to go forward in a better way. All right, let's start with this husband-wife conflict. So again, we're gonna do proactive and reactive. But first, I just want to say we're going to spend probably the most time on this one, because really this is the most important of the three relationships. Everything really trickles down from here. If this is healthy, if this relationship's healthy, if nothing else, the kids are going to at least have an example of healthy conflict resolution. And you guys as a team will be able to succeed there. As I was interviewing other couples, I kept trying to get to the other dynamics, and it would come right back to husband wife, because this is where we really do see a lot of chance for growth here, and it's going to influence our kids. All right, so some proactive points, how to set your marriage up in such a way that you're prepared to not avoid conflict. This isn't going to prevent conflict. That would be bad. Again, you're two sinners married. Of course, you're going to have conflict. What we're going to do here is find ways to set ourselves up to deal with conflict in a healthy way. When you've set the groundwork, then when conflict does come in, You both have a level of trust and knowledge of how to deal with this in a healthy way. All right, first of all, you need nearly daily personal and combined prayer about marriage. All right, I say nearly. In other words, you set that as the goal. You've got a time slot set for this. And then most days you'll do it. A lot of days you won't, and that's okay. But I've learned this. I remember from Mike Bullmore when he came to our summer institute. He said every day he'll read some scripture, he'll pray through that a little bit, but then he'll pray for his family, he'll pray for his church, and he'll pray for his day. And I followed that. I've been doing that for the last 11 years or so now since I heard that. And I think that's a good outline of how I think through my, at least that in my daily prayer. Pray for my family, my church, and for my day. So I try to do that every morning. I miss a lot, but I do that when I can. And then at night, laying in bed with the spouse, that's a great time to say, let's just pray for our kids. Let's pray for our marriage right now. And you pray together there. That one can be a little harder. You know, Satan, I think, really tries to prevent that one from happening. And we're not nearly as consistent in that as we are with our daily prayer for each other. But man, you put both of those on a nearly daily basis, you are setting yourself up for a good marriage and to be able to know how to deal with conflict in a healthy way. Nearly weekly, fun, purposeful date night. This is a proactive step you can take. Again, you know, you're going to miss some weeks, something happens, but you've got it in the schedule. Make it fun. Do something that's fun. We like to, we got into gin rummy playing that. We like to go for walks. Right now we've got a show we're watching. We have to find a show that's live. Otherwise, you know, one of us will stream the whole thing and then the other one won't be able to catch up. So we're watching this show that's only coming out once a week, and that works for us. Something fun, and then something that's purposeful. You know, listen to a teaching together. The Gottman Institute has all kinds of articles on their website. Go there and listen to one of them. I like the idea of rotating. One spouse is planning the date night this week, the other one's the next week. At the very least, I try to have at least one question or topic that I want to discuss with my spouse on date night. My date night's Monday nights. Maybe something happened on a Friday and I haven't had a chance to talk thoroughly through with my wife about it. So I've got that in mind. I'm like, okay, on Monday, we're gonna talk about that topic that came up. And I think when both spouses do that, you're going to have some good date nights. Now, I think even in the crazy, crazy years where you've got the one-year-old, the three-year-old, and the five-year-old or something like that, and you're just like, you know, the water's over your head, you're barely hanging on. I think even in those, you can fight for a date night. Now, all those go down a little bit. Maybe it's just a little bit fun. And maybe the purpose is, again, you just have one topic you're talking about. But I think you can fight for this, and you continue to proactively fight for purposeful date nights, even in the midst of the crazy. Another way to proactively prepare yourselves in a marriage is to have agreed upon structures. A lot of people are like, well, I don't do well with the schedule. I don't do well with structures. Look, you really can't get around it. I'd say get the Excel sheet out. Monday, you're taking the kid to school. Tuesday, I'm doing the laundry, etc., right? And you work through, here's what we both agree on. When you do that, you can avoid less important conflict so that you can fight over the important things. I don't want my main fights with my wife to be that I did the dishes two nights in a row and she didn't or something like that. That I don't want that to be the main fight. Now, there's going to be fights of that, but when you structure and schedule it, you're helping avoid that. Now, when you have that, you should make it your aim to volunteer to do one of their jobs once a week. It's an aim, but think of when you can offer to step in and do one of their jobs once a week. Again, think about both spouses with that kind of a mindset. You've got this structured system, but you're each trying to outserve each other too. Boy, you're setting yourself up for some success there. I think this is especially true when you go on vacations, like a home church vacation, or you're with your extended family on a vacation and you've got two little kids. You're used to vacations being your mindset is I get to indulge the flesh here. Okay. I get to do whatever I want for a week. This is wonderful. And now you got two little kids. And it's like, man, no, you don't. You don't get to do any of that anymore. It feels like. And I think that's a time more than ever that as much as you can block out literally like hour by hour, here's what the plan is. And we're going to show each other grace, but we're going to be fair here. And we both know, so I know when my wife's sitting out at the beach and I'm feeding the kid, I know that, hey, that's going to switch tomorrow. And again, what that does is eliminates a lot of the smaller deal conflict to enable you to have conflict over important things. Agree upon structures, figure those out as best as you can. Another proactive step, set nearly weekly time with a friend in the same stage of life, okay? If you're a husband, do you have another husband, another dad out there who you meet with on a nearly weekly time frame? If it's not set, if it's like, yeah, we basically hang out most weeks, I think in that case, it won't even be every other week. If it's set, you'll meet most weeks and then some weeks you won't. I think that's the way you've got to do it here. You get your camaraderie, your accountability, and it keeps you sane in those times. a lot of times in our church, we call this kind of thing peer discipleship. You've got one person who you're meeting with. You're at the same place kind of spiritually, same place and stage of life. And you're getting together to keep each other moving forward. It's good to study something for these. Now, maybe you're like, look, we meet for 45 minutes before work. I don't have time to study something. Well, you could always be like, hey, let's each read the same book. We'll read the same chapter on our own each week. And then when we get together, we'll say, here's one thing I really liked from the chapter. Here's something I disagreed with. What did you think about this? And we'll talk about it. You don't have to read the book out loud together if the time frame is just not working for that. You could still get through some good material, continue to educate yourself, push yourself forward, especially in areas of parenting and marriage. Read stuff like that, but just read on your own and then talk about it later. A lot of the weeks, you know, it will just be encouragement. There won't be anything crazy going on, but there will be some of those weeks where you're going to greatly benefit from a sounding board. Look, here's what happened. Here's the fight we had this week. You got any thoughts for me? Was I in the wrong here? Help me out. Give me your thoughts. And to have a good friend that can be honest with you outside of just your spouse, who at the moment you're probably not wanting to listen to or trust. Boy, that's life-saving. You need something like that. I urge you, if you don't have at least one other same-sex friend that you're meeting with on a regular basis to talk, just to set yourself up for those kind of conversations, I got to urge you to find a way to do it. Along with this, have you given your spouse the green light to talk about your marriage in all of its difficult, crazy areas with their friends? Do they know that you think it's okay for them to do that? I guess that takes a step further back. Do you think it's okay for them to do it? And if not, why not? We're all sinners. We're all trying to do this. You need help. I urge you to give your spouse the green light to say, hey, when we get in these type of fights, when these things are going on, you have the green light to talk to your friends about that and get help. And I want that for my friends as well. Now, this is the proactive stuff. Maybe you're like, okay, look at this. Nearly daily, weekly. Look, this is a lot of time commitment. Well, these are the ideals. This is the schedule. You're scheduling these things in. And, you know, you'll miss them sometimes. But if you've got them scheduled, you'll hit them most times. And I'll also say this is the most important relationship in your life. Yeah, you're going to have a large time commitment. You better believe you need a large time commitment for that. Okay, so that's some of the proactive stuff. What do we do reactively here in conflict? You've gotten into that great conflict with your spouse. A couple points here. First of all, accept their weaknesses as you focus on their strengths. This is such a key in my marriage. You know, when I was dating and engaged to my wife, now wife, boy, I knew her strengths. And what did I do about the weaknesses? I put on my old marriage goggles. And I'm like, you know what? Yeah, those are weaknesses, but they're not a big deal. Or worse yet, I was like, well, you know, once she marries me, I'm sure those weaknesses will fall apart. And she did the same thing with me, right? And guess what? They don't. In fact, they show themselves much more brightly. You're no longer putting your best foot forward. The weaknesses really stand out. But you knew they were there. You knew they were there. And you chose to marry this person anyway because of how much you admired their strengths. So the good news is you can get back to that. You can pray for a mindset to focus on the strengths. Like that's where you wanna be, focusing on those things that you, the reason you married this person in the first place, the things you admire about them. And then that'll help you to accept those weaknesses that you've known were there all along. Put yourself in their shoes. You know, you've had a long day. Okay, so have they. What has their long day been like? This, you know, my wife's been taking care of these kids all day. The kids have been constantly trying to manipulate her. And she's asking me for some help. Maybe she didn't do it in the kindest way, but she's had a tough one. Can I take a quick step back and say, wow, what she's gone through today, even though what I've gone through is hard, what she's gone through today, that would be really difficult. And I think I can get in there and try to help out. This is such a key one. This saves so much unnecessary judgment and comparison when you just stop and say, look, I'm going to put myself in my spouse's shoes here. There are rules against certain things in marriage, physical and verbal abuse. Now, when I've talked with couples about this before, they don't really like this term rules. They're like, you should use another word because rule sounds external, legalistic. You're not really thinking through the, you know, deep-hearted reasons. Look, I get it. In marriage, in family, in conflict, you're going to have to get deeper than the surface level. But you also need some basic ground rules here that I cannot have any physical abuse in this marriage. I cannot lay my hands on you in anger. And I think that includes, I cannot throw furniture, dishes near them or, you know, around them in a way of intimidation and threat. Also, there's a rule against verbal abuse. The idea of name calling, using some of the most vicious language I can think of and putting that toward my spouse. Calling up insecurities that we both know that this spouse has. I'm so angry that I'm going to bring that into an argument. Again, threats, any kind of actual verbal threat that I'm saying toward this person. Those are the rules. Look, they are. And it's like, okay, if you've broken the rules, it doesn't mean you're kicked out of the game. You know, it's over, you're done. That's not what it means. It means you need to get help. And it's time to take a, it's time to say, look, we need some help here because we're breaking the rules. And, you know, God is a God of healing. He can restore your marriage in great ways. But if you're seeing this kind of activity in your conflict, I urge you to get some help. Brings me to my next point, okay? One of the great ways to avoid that is de-escalation. And this really goes for all three of the relationships. The most important step to not breaking the rules for you might be just taking time, go in the other room, get in your car, go for a drive, go for a walk, whatever. Walk away from the situation, de-escalate. Clear your head and get ready to have healthy conflict. Keep a category for this. Now, if you're like me, I'm the kind of person who, if we're in conflict, we got to resolve it now. I don't want to have to think about this for the next couple hours when I'm away from you. Let's figure out the resolution now. And that's maybe a way that I can sacrifice and serve my spouse is to say, well, they need some time to let the emotions come down a little bit. And out of love, I'll take on the fact that I don't get to have this conflict resolved right now. I've got to wait in that and I'm going to be thinking about it a lot. Okay, that's my sacrifice. That's a way to love my spouse. Let them de-escalate. Have some conflict in front of your kids. You know, a lot of us have grown up in households where either our parents just, you know, didn't hold back at all in front of us. And we thought, oh no, they're getting divorced like every week. Or we grew up in houses like for me, where the parents just never fought in front of us. And they set this really unrealistic expectation that, yeah, good marriages, you just don't fight. And so I get married and I get in a fight very soon. I'm like, oh no, you know, that there's something wrong with me. We want to show our kids that conflict is normal and there's healthy ways and unhealthy ways to deal with it. Now, of course, some conflict due to the content or intensity, maybe you don't have in front of the kids, but have some of your conflict in front of the kids. And then apologize in front of the kids. I heard this recently from a Tim and Kathy Keller interview. And so I've tried it and it didn't go that well. I got to keep working at this because we were still both pretty heated. But my kids came into the room, so I walked in front of my wife, right in front of my kids, and said, you know what, I'm really sorry. And it just felt like I'm kind of using them as a backstop almost, like, you know, she can't really go after me now because my kids are there. It just didn't feel as genuine, so I'm still figuring out how to do that. I think at the very least, I try to tell my kids, hey, you know when you saw me walk away from mom and she was upset and I just walked right out of the room on her like that, that wasn't right. I shouldn't have done that. And I apologized to her. I said I was sorry and she forgave me. Like let them know the end result of this. So again, they're learning apologizing and forgiving through all that. It's okay if one spouse initiates reconciliation more than the other spouse does. Ajith Fernando brings this point up in his book, Family Life of the Christian Leader. And that was so helpful for me to hear because I like to keep track of that. You know, I apologized first the last three times here. And what he says is, you know, maybe that's more your gifting. Maybe that's a big part of your role in marriage is that you get to initiate reconciliation. And as long as they, you know, reciprocate it, then it's okay. You don't have to be so upset that they didn't lead the way in apologizing. Maybe that's just kind of your role in the marriage. Just hearing that really freed me from one more thing to judge my spouse on. I can accept that. That's just my role. That's okay. I think along with this, it's also okay if one spouse tends to lead the way in listening to these types of teachings more, reading parenting books more, reading marriage books more. And again, as long as the other spouse will hear them out and be willing to implement what they've come up with since they did the hard work at the end of the day. My wife reads tons of parenting books, marriage books, listens to all these parenting teachings, and she'll give me some clips here and there and I'll read them. But we've come to understand, I'm just not going to do that as much as she does. And she's coming to understand that's okay, as long as I'm willing to do some and hear her out. Okay, like I said, that's the longest one. That's the key one. Let's keep moving here. So next up is the parent-child conflict. All right, so how can we proactively set ourselves up in our families so that when I'm with my child, I'm going to have healthy conflict? What can I do outside of the conflict to get myself ready for that? Well, number one is to have regular, fun dates and family dinners, okay? I get a weekly date with each of my daughters. And I look at it right now like I'm the college football coach and I'm recruiting this kid, okay? So it has to include a snack. You're like, well, you know, it's not, she doesn't genuinely care enough about me. I'm not going to give her a snack. We're just going to have fun. Sorry, she's not there yet. Okay. I want to get to a place where when she has choice about this date, she wants to go on this date with me. And so I'm at a stage of winning her right now. And a big part of winning her right now is a snack, which she has chosen. And that's kind of my mindset on it. I want to win her. Now, this gets more expensive as they age. I used to be able to get away with taking her to Tim Hortons, and we would split a 5-pack of Timbits for $1 and have a cup of ice water each. So I'd get away with a $1 date. Not anymore. Okay, she's discovered this place called Dairy Queen, and that's where we tend to go now. But, you know, it works out for me too. It's a little better food. But I imagine as we get older, it's going to even get more expensive. We're going to be going to dinners and doing things like that. And that's again, I think it's worth it. I want to win this person. I got to wine and dine them. And that's what I'm doing here. On the dates, I have it as a goal to have at least one real or spiritual topic in a conversation. That's kind of the goal I have. And some weeks it goes better than others. And when they're young, it's really tough. When they're really young, you could even have something like you're driving on your way to a date and you could just say something like, hey, did you know that God is with us in this car right now? Like we can't see him, but he's here right now listening to us. Isn't that cool? What do you think about that? And then we move on, right? That's it. That was something, right? You're just building that as part of the habit that you do. On your dates, try to find ways to communicate how much you enjoy that time, that you're so thrilled that you get to spend this time with them. Communicate that to them. Manage expectations. You're going to have some good dates, but you're going to have a lot of times when they're sitting there quietly, not saying much, not responding hardly at all, totally distracted. And what I've been told by older couples, keep doing it anyway. Because if you lose that regular time slot at the date, it becomes very hard to build back up when they're in kind of the older years, the awkward years. But if you've kept it, that becomes such a habit that it becomes so good when they become adults, and you've got that set. And so you're kind of investing in that for now. Keep the dates going, even though there's going to be plenty of them that aren't that great and they're not that fun. As far as the dinners go, try to have a lot of fun, a lot of laughing. One question that we usually ask, we'll go around and ask each other so they learn how to ask questions, right, is what was the best part of your day? They'll answer. Try to come up with one follow-up question to that. What was the hardest part of your day? They'll answer one follow-up question. And so I'll ask a daughter, she'll ask mom, mom will ask the other daughter, ask me. We'll just kind of go around and each person asks someone those two questions and try to come up with some follow-up questions. Pretty simple, but you know, we've gotten a lot of mileage out of that, learned a lot of what's going on in our kids' lives through that question or those questions. I think you should avoid working through conflict during the dates and the dinners. We want those to be safe, memorable areas that the kids look back on with a lot of fondness. There's plenty of other time to work through those conflicts. Okay, another proactive step. Creatively show them that they are the priority. Look, you probably got a busy life. You're involved in your church and your work and other things. How can you demonstrate that they're a priority? Creatively find ways to do this. Ajith Fernando talks about this in his book, Family Life of a Christian Leader, where he says, like, one time his kid had a track meet and he couldn't make it. And so he tried to rush through this meeting and he pushed it and he finally got the meeting to end a little early. He drove so fast to the track. He's in his suit and tie. He runs down to the fence and his kid's just about to start. And he's running along the fence in his suit and tie, cheering for his son. And I'm like, wow, that is a really good picture. That kid certainly remembered, hey, dad's busy. Dad's got important things to go, but I'm one of those important things and I matter. And I love that picture. And I hope my kids think that way about how I prioritize them as well. A friend of mine gave me this number. I don't know where he got it or what to think of it, but he says, keep the positive to negative ratio around 4-1 in how you relate, the affect you give off, your comments, right? 4-1 positive negative ratio. In other words, basically the opposite that I have with my dog. All right. For better or worse, I find myself with my dog. Hey, stop that. Don't chew that. Get away from that. Don't do that. Oh, he's a good boy. Right. Like so many negative comments. Well, I don't want that with my kid. I want to have the primary amount of comments positive, and then I've set myself up for some good negative comments too. Set clear consequences. This kind of goes in both. This is a proactive step, but it leads right into the reactive also. In my opinion, the biggest weakness I've seen in parenting is false threats. You make a threat that you know you won't come through on. So you just get to the family party, right? There's all these people there. The kid does something stupid. And you say, hey, if you don't stop that, we're going to leave. Now, the kid knows you're not going to leave. You know you're not going to leave. And so they're not going to stop it. That didn't work. If you don't stop that, you're not going to have any birthday cake. Yeah, right. You know, grandma and grandpa are sitting right there. They're going to give them the birthday cake. Come up with something. There is something. Come up with something that you can actually follow through on. If you don't stop that, you're going to have 2 minutes time out. I'm going to go sit over there with you and you're not going to be able to play with the kids for those 2 minutes. That's actually doable. Even at a big party, you could do that. So find things that you can actually follow through on. False threats, your kids see through it way more than you think they would. Now, there is a category for relenting on discipline. You can do that. You can have set a consequence and then not come through with it. Now, how you know you're in a good spot, when you've been giving a lot of false threats, the kid is surprised that you're actually following through on the discipline. When you've been following through well and setting good consequences, then the kid's surprised at the grace. That's what you want. You want them surprised at grace and grateful for it because they know what they deserve there. That's a good place to be. Okay, what are some reactive thoughts for the parent-child conflict? First of all, try to limit conflict in the less significant areas. It's tempting to look good externally, or to fit in with the culture's priorities, you know, what they wear, what their hair looks like, even their grades to some extent. I talked to one parent and they were like, I don't think my son has worn long pants in years. And he's like, it's tempting to be like, man, I look like such a terrible parent. Can you put some pants on? But he's like, you know what? You've only got so much conflict capital. You want to save it for the important stuff. Now, if you've set clear expectations, then conflict in those smaller areas is often easily avoided. You know, if you really want them to do a chore around the house, but you don't want to have conflict about it, it's just real clear. Look, if you don't do your chore, then you're not going to have a snack tonight. All right. And they forget to do their chore. Sorry, no snack. They're going to yell and scream. Sorry. That's what it is. Eventually they'll get it. And the conflict will lower in that area so that you can have conflict in other areas instead. I'd rather save my tough talks for things like character issues, their friendships, how they're relating with their siblings, as opposed to that they didn't make the bed. I don't want to have conflict over that. There's a consequence. They know it. I know it. The end. If you can do that, you're gonna be able to have good, better conflict there. Lower the number of rules that you do have and enforce those. You know what a fun exercise is? Ask your kids, say, what do you think mommy and daddy's main rules are for our family? It's fascinating to come up with what they might think are the main rules there. Okay. That'd be a good question to ask right there. Okay. Another reactive point. Dad's turn to step in when he comes home. Mom's been doing this. I know dad's had a lot of stuff going on also, but it's time to bring in the relief pitcher. Dealing with manipulation all day long, dad needs to take over. That's just a principle to happen. Now, dad can pray about it on his drive home. God, give me the strength to do this, but come in with the mindset that I'm gonna handle some of this conflict. I'm gonna step in and help out when I come in. Talk through the conflict. Find ways to apologize to your children. Now, you're like, well, I don't want them to feel good about manipulating the situation. If I apologize to them, I'm affirming that they were right. No, you can find other ways to deal with that. But they also need to see that it's healthy for an adult to admit they're a sinner and to apologize. Find what you've done wrong, apologize for that. And if they've wronged you, get your spouse to convince them to apologize to you. Now that's for some kids, ooh, they just can't do it. You know, I can't say those words. I'm sorry. In fact, my one daughter at this point prefers to write it out. And I don't think that's a good long-term plan, but for now we kind of let it. She writes, you know, I'm sorry, I shouldn't have done that. I feel bad about it. And she writes it out, gives it to us as a letter. But find ways to have them apologize to you when they've done wrong also. Again, the spouse should come in on that one so it doesn't look like you're needily asking them for that. Ask them the questions, right? What was it that angered you so much? How did you feel about what happened in that conversation? Can you see why I reacted that way? What do you think you should do next time? What do you think I should do next time? You know, you're just talking through what happened in this conflict. I love the feelings chart. I mean, for myself, because I'm not very good at that, but for my kids also to be like, here's how I feel right now, right? I'm angry, I'm jealous, I'm sad, I'm hurt, whatever it may be. They've got the pictures of the faces, they've got a word under it. We get a lot out of those. And then finally here, offer a hug after disciplining. They may or may not take it, but you want them to know you're affirming them no matter what kind of conflict you've got in. You love them. You don't think of them any worse or any different. Okay, lastly here, child-child conflict. A couple proactive points. Number one, have them do dates. You do dates with your spouse. You do dates with your kid. Have the kid do a date with the other kid. We like to set them both at the table. And of course, guess what you need? You need good food. You need a snack. You need something like that. And they sit down at the table and we're like, okay, you guys, 15-minute date, you guys chat with each other. And of course, we'll listen in the other room. We're so curious of it. But they're building some kind of friendship there. Have them do dates with each other. Rotate the fun family activities. You know, don't just do the reading the book every time. Do the riding the bike sometime. Don't just do the coloring every time. Do the soccer sometimes. That way both kids are kind of getting their enjoyable hobbies taken care of. Rotate who gets to pick the movie, who gets to pick the snack, things like that. Both kids are seeing that they're important there. As far as reactive stuff with child-child conflict, balance teaching with letting them work it out. Okay, you're trying to teach them conflict resolution, but you're also letting them learn on the job, right? So you've got this scenario. Kid comes in, Dad, Joey hit me. Okay, extreme number one, you guys go figure it out. All right, you can't come out of that room until you figured it out. And then there's no follow-up, no instruction at all. All right, now you're an adult. And you don't even do conflict that well. You think your seven-year-old kid is going to not let the powerful one manipulate that situation and work that. They don't know how to do conflict. That's too much of letting them work out. The other extreme is, Dad, Joey hit me. Joey, go to timeout. What? I don't want to hear it. And there's zero thinking this through. There's just dealing with the situation. The middle ground, right? Dad, Joey hit me. Joey, come here. Tell me what happened. Okay, what do you think happened? I'm teaching a couple principles here. And then maybe I will say, look, with that in mind, I want you two to go over in this room here. And I want you to talk this through just the way you did with me. Hear each other out. And then when you're done, I want you to come report to me how that went. All right. And until that happens, you guys are in timeout together. And so you kind of have an occasion for both. They're learning how to do this, and you're instructing them and giving them advice along the way. Have them apologize and forgive. Now, people are like, well, I won't make them apologize because they just don't feel it yet. And it feels like it's just like an external thing. They don't really feel it in their heart. How often have you apologized and not yet felt it quite in your heart yet, but you've known it's the right thing to do? Same thing with forgiveness, right? Now, I think as long as they can articulate why, it's okay that you've kind of made this a requirement. They have to apologize. If they can articulate why. If they can't articulate why, then no, I'm not ready to just have them say, I'm sorry, you know, grunt out an I'm sorry. Why are you sorry? You know, let's hear what you think you did wrong here. Or I forgive you. Okay, what are you forgiving? What is it that you're forgiving here? I think once they're there, it's okay to make that a requirement. Got to have similar rules as we talked with the husband, wife, obviously with the parent child as well, but with the child, you know, nothing physical and, you know, scratches or punches, takedowns, chokes, all those kind of things, right? We got to step in on those. And then there's the verbal abuse also, where, you know, kids can say things to their siblings that are unbelievable. I hate you. I wish you were dead. You say things like that to another person. You cannot take it back. Or identity language, right? You are a coward. You are a liar. You are awful, weak, terrible. Those type of words, we've got to step in and say, look, we'll teach all the deep down, deeper foundational things, but we need to have rules for what you can and cannot say and what you can and cannot do. All right. And then finally here, the goal is to become less involved in this as they age. We're front loading this. I'm helping them learn these principles. I'm helping them grow here, hoping that by the time they are older, they've learned enough that they can work through this themselves a lot more than they do now. Okay, that's all I've got. I just wanted to say at the end again, You could feel either really guilty here, or you could feel like, man, there's 17 things I'm trying to implement here now. Well, neither of those are any good. We've got to just pick the two or three things that we think as a family, this would be most important to us. And let's go with that. Let's take some steps forward and believe that God wants us to have healthy conflict resolution in our families. All right. Hopefully that's helpful.